following has been pre-recorded for your listening and dancing pleasure.
This Doug and Danny podcast brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. Cunningham's Journal, the only bar you need to know in Kearney.
This is Central Nebraska's most listened to all sports radio station.
We always parade winners around here.
From 1460 KXPN and 1550 KICS, you're listening to Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
For any of you who have listened in the past, you know that I am not a radio-trained personality, so we are just going by the seat of our pants.
It's time for the Tri-Cities' number one sports show. You're listening to the Doug and Daddy Show.
Victoria Anzoretska, you know, though, these Russians, they need to buy a vowel. Let me just say that. They need to buy a vowel with that first name.
Now coming to you live from the Midway Auto Dealership broadcast booth. Need a vehicle? Think Midway.com.
No. I don't think that's just it's minor. It's just a minor sin. It's a minor one. Well, I'm coming to you then for some of the major ones.
It's time for the Doug and Daddy Show.
Everyone, welcome to the Doug and Daddy Show Wednesday edition here on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation. Doug Duda, Randy Bushcutter with you on the program today. Wednesday means Loper Link. We'll talk with the UNK Chancellor, Doug Christensen. We've had the draw today for the Belmont. We'll go to our national correspondent, Michelle Yu from HRTV. That's Horse Racing Television. You've seen her on the TVG and a variety of different places. We had her on before the Kentucky Derby. We'll talk with her at the bottom of the hour. At the end of the show, Greg Shea, the Tri-City Storm will pop in, talk about where they're at, what's going on in the summer. But the USHL named the new president and commissioner, and I think it'll be interesting, without getting too deep into it, because I'm going to be frank, even you, Randy, as a hockey fan, this would bore a lot of people. They're not deep into the USHL, but I think there's some questions out there, and I know Greg has some opinions, and maybe he'll just give us a couple of updates.
Well, you start with your league champion disbands afterwards. I mean, that just is, it's just on the surface, there's some PR issues there that the new commissioner is going to start with right out of the chute.
So we'll talk about that as well on the show today. But breaking news, there's an accident on 39th and 2nd in Kearney. So,
wow, that almost never happens.
Oh,
that
yeah.
Almost never happens.
No, wait a minute. I've got it wrong. It's at the top of the hill. So what is that? That's 39th and
2nd.
Second. Did I get that right?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
How long have you lived here?
I mean, you've
been here long enough.
You can give me an address with the numbers on it in town here. It's going to take me a long time to figure it out.
Well, especially if you're trying to find something on Avenue J. You'll have a lot of trouble if you're trying to find something on Avenue J.
You give me that 2714 North 37th, and I'm going to go, huh.
That's GPS. Yeah, how do you spell
exactly.
GPS?
Exactly. Yeah. So I just want to let the folks know, if you're going up there, there might be a quicker way around town, Avenue E, or go out by the fairgrounds to go around here for a little bit. Just a little heads up.
I hope it isn't serious.
No.
Okay.
No,
right.
It didn't look serious. It looked like a car ran into another car.
I also hope it doesn't involve anyone named Bushcutter, which has happened near that area. So
one was a little white car with like the government plates on it.
Uh-oh, good. It's not UNK car, is it?
No. And then the other one was a green car.
Okay.
Kind of dark. And I know that, you know,
that precludes us.
That doesn't concern anybody here, but hopefully everybody's okay. All right, there you go. Let's get into our Loper Lake to start this Wednesday program. Brought to you by CharterWest National Bank. Kearney, you have the reasons, they have the loans. See Russ Smith today at CharterWest National Bank. Randy, in the scheme of things, everything was done basically by this time last week. The only couple of notes that we have is that the track and field team, Kevin Carter, Dylan Schroat, Jackie Zemke, selected academic all-district. And then last night, it was announced that Mark Fiala from the wrestling team is now third-team academic All-American, and they put that as the at-large because you'll hear All-American football team, All-American basketball, but this includes all of the and I always hate to use the word minor, but I guess that's what you would say out there. It's wrestling, it's ice hockey, it's swimming, it's golf, it's fencing, gymnastics. All those athletes are put onto this list, and congratulations to Mark Fiala. And UNK finished 33rd in the Learfield Sports Director Cup standings, which were finalized this morning.
And third in the MIAA, which I think is worth noting because people recognize it as one of the toughest athletic conferences in the country. They finished third overall in that. That's pretty solid.
And
for the newbie.
Well, yeah, and to discuss the next conference move for the University of Nebraska at Kearney, since the MIAA obviously isn't that tough, Chancellor Doug Christensen, good morning.
Good morning.
What does that stuff matter?
39th and second, it matters a lot to me, yeah.
When you talk about success, sometimes you look at some of these Learfield Director Cups and you pick somebody, hey, we're always strong in track and we're always going to be first or second there. And I think you could probably say that, like with Loper wrestling, they're always going to get points there. Volleyball. Going to get points.
Sure.
But Mr. Plinski was saying how, and I know he said it at Blue Gold, and I know he said it last month when he was with us on the show, how almost every one of the 17 programs was at or better than they had been here in the last 2 years of the MIAA.
That's right, and probably the two that weren't that didn't show great improvement were the two that's always at the top, you know?
Yeah.
So we go from first to second or whatever.
Yeah.
I think those are good to measure ourselves nationally with. But again, you know, I think from my chair, what I'm looking at is, what's the student experience? And if the student experience is high, then I think that's a measure of success for us. Other people on the outside looking in are going to say, well, how do you compare nationally? And so just as you'd see with some of the high school, you know, they'll have like the Director's Cup for high school boys and girls. Some of these smaller schools have a whole ton of activities and gain a lot of little points. The schools that are successful in the major four or five will be down the list a little bit because they probably aren't going to have all the small participants. But I'm really pleased. I think everybody's showing progress. But more importantly for me, what I see an attitude of, we belong. We can do this. We're not there yet. You know, I think there's a positive attitude that flows through the department, and that rubs off on the rest of campus. And so, yeah, it's third. Good. Can we be second? Yeah. You know, and the world, you got to take a broader view of this thing. So,
speaking of broader view, obviously you run the broader university. You're the head of the broader University of Nebraska, Kearney. This is a sports show. We look at things through the athletic department and that sort of thing. And I know we've asked you about this and touched on it before, but I'd like to have you do it again. What role does the athletic department have in terms of the greater mission of UNK?
Oh, I think there's a wide variety of roles here. First of all, our student-athletes are just that. They're students first. So when we look at a student-athlete, yeah, it's easier to categorize them. They're a little more visible. So when a student-athlete does something, it's a little more open to the public. And so we look at their grade point averages. We look at their graduation rates. Well, if you look at our athletic department, our student-athletes graduate a little higher rate. They have a higher grade point average as a group than the average student body. So that means there's a positive influence on the student body from that perspective. Diversity. You know, one of the hallmarks of a university is you need some diversity. If we all looked like each other and had the same background, it didn't broaden our horizons very much. Athletics is certainly a source of diversity for us, so that it helps us there. It's also a way that the community engages. So not a lot of people are going to come in and talk to us about our history department because they don't go to history class. We don't have 5,000 people in line to go see Peter Longo's class. They should.
They should.
The professors don't like that when you bring the big heads on sticks into history class and into psych class. It distracts them, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I think Mark Ellis might enjoy that in his history class. But as a general rule, you know, most people don't go and see what happens in the classroom because it's impractical to be able to get there. But they can come to the university and see our student-athletes perform. And so whether we think it's right or wrong, this state has tremendous support for the university system. And a lot of that's channeled through the Big Red Football program. Whether that's right or wrong, That's most people's connection to the university. And so their attitude is the university, good or bad, depends on whether we went 12-0 or, you know, 4-8. Those are things that people look from the outside in. And so for us, athletics is very important because it engages the community. The other part is good for recruitment of students. People tend to come where they've, let's say they go to volleyball camp or they go to a football camp or a basketball camp. When they're 7 or 8 years old, you know, suddenly what they start to do is, I can see myself here. I'm comfortable here. This isn't an impossible place to be. You know, let's say you go to the Notre Dame camp in the summertime, you're going, holy cow, I don't know anybody here. No, I mean, you know, I'm a long way away from home. This is hard to, for most kids, I'd be hard to see myself here. But you come here and you're sitting in a camp or a music camp and you're going, yeah, you know, I can see myself being here. So it helps from that point. I think it builds loyalty as well, and it brings some enthusiasm. You know, you don't get a chance to exactly stand up and cheer in class, but here's a chance to go out and support colleagues, people that are your same age doing mm-hmm. things at a high level. It's the competition that's important. I mean, I'm competitive enough. I mean, I even like a good golf match if somebody, even though we're both terrible golfers, if it's close and we're evenly matched, it's the competition that's the draw. So that's the reason Division II, I think, is really important, because I think athletics helps those student-athletes.
Mm-hmm.
Why do they get better grades? Well, because they have a connection to the university. Those coaches are talking to them, study, go to class, and by the way, go to class. Well, those are probably the three best things you can tell somebody, and it's responsibility and so on. So there's benefit to it. Is the university made for athletics? I mean, we don't exist for athletics. We still exist for giving them a degree, and their degree doesn't get an asterisk saying superstar athlete. Yeah. It does say, you know, magna cum laude, pseudo cum laude, where we acknowledge excellence in the classroom. That's still our purpose. But by and large, for Kearney, the faculty are supportive. I mean, it's a pain in the neck for the faculty to have athletes. They're gone. They're gone quite a bit. And if you're, let's say, in baseball, where you're traveling a lot, there's some pretty understanding faculty members who come in early, stay late, do extra things to accommodate those student-athletes. That doesn't happen everywhere. We're very lucky that I think there's that good relationship. And part of that starts, obviously, with the athletic director and the coaches' relationships with the faculty.
Doug Christensen, chancellor at UNK, joins us here. I guess something that has occurred to me while we were talking about the academic all-districts and the academic all-Americans, every time I look at that, and I don't crunch the numbers, but UNK seems to be doing very, very well compared to the rest of the country, MIAA, whoever. Yes. But we're always talking money. You gotta keep these kids tutored. You gotta keep these kids going through their study hall time.
Right.
Is this a question for you? Can you explain? I guess, and I don't know if you're the one to answer this, but do monies that we raise for each individual program go for this? Do things from the Blue Gold go to help student athletes, kind of like this?
Those are really good questions, actually. You know, most people, when you talk about you're going to get a scholarship to play at Kearney or Wayne or wherever, assume that that's a full – they go, oh, God, you're getting your way to college paid. We've got young men and women who are playing for $100 a semester in some cases. We have very few full rides. The money that gets raised at Blue Gold and for example, Daryl had the football backers group. Most of that's going to scholarship money. That is direct payments to help them pay for tuition. Student-athletes can take advantage of the same things that we give to every other student on campus. For example, at Kearney, you're not going to pay for tutoring. So if you need tutoring or writing assistance, I mean, I would have lived there. We have built that into our student fees. The learning commons up at the library that we've renovated – That is not for people who are necessarily failing or people who are struggling there. Sure they are, but so are people that have B pluses and who want an A. And we have tutors and resource people there that have no extra cost, where if you would go to a Division I school, athletic department's going to pay people to be a tutor. They're going to have designated services. That's the great part about UNK is we do that for all of our students. And that helps. Now, the discipline is go. You got to go. And I can tell you, for example, Daryl's got a couple young men who I am really proud of, who probably weren't the most dedicated high school students. They might have been like the rest of us, that academics were sort of, I got to be here. But they got here, and all of a sudden they're on the dean's list because they're motivated. And when I walk through Memorial Student Affairs Building, I'll see them sitting there with the tutors or the people in academic success. Those are the ones we've made. Wow, what a great value we've given to them. And oh, by the way, now they're all conference performers. And so we do support them in that way. Could we do more? Absolutely. Technology is probably the way we could do even more with our student athletes. They miss a lot of time. I know the coaches are pretty involved in this. We've had iPad projects on campus. So our student athletes are on the road. Why shouldn't they be able to watch the lecture? I mean, they paid for it. They ought to be able to see it. So we're doing things like called lecture capture, where we record the lectures, and it's available 24/7 on the web to them. Those are good things. Or they can sit on the bus and have Wi-Fi and be able to have access to all this stuff, as opposed to, when I get back, here's the 7 days of makeup work. That's not fair to the students. It's not fair to the faculty. So I think our technology is really going to help out student athletes even more. We owe it to them to do that. The other thing is, I don't think people understand how hard it is to be a student athlete. My goodness, it's a full-time job. So you look at a Mike Colgate playing golf. He probably goes out every afternoon, 6 days a week, and plays 18 holes and practices, and then travels the other days and is gone for long stretches. He's going to class. He's spending probably 6 hours at golf every day. And it isn't like he's in front of cheering crowds and people asking for autographs. He's on his own a lot. He's very dedicated. But that's the experience of many of our student athletes. And they'll come from high school and say, volleyball's a 3-month sport. Well, now I'm doing it 12 months a year. It is a full-time job. And so I think it's a full-time job to be a college student. It's a full-time job to be a student. It's a full-time job to be an athlete. Well, now you got three full-time jobs, and you want to have a little bit of fun.
Yeah.
Should be able to squeeze that in a little bit.
Yeah.
I've been asked this question, and I've tried to explain it, and I do a very poor job of it, and I know you'll do a much better job. You got Bruner Hall of Science. You got 300 seats in this hall. Why can't the university just say, all right, we're going to just have more scholarships? We don't actually have to raise funds because there's either a student sitting in the chair or there isn't. Why can't the university just kind of open up seats and say, all right, this is for X number of student-athletes, whether they play tennis, volleyball, golf, what have you. Why do you actually have to raise actual dollars? Can't you just there's either somebody in the seat or there isn't. Why can't the university just give that away?
Right, and we do give it away. It's called remissions. We also give it to people who have a Regents scholarship.
Exactly.
So they're smart kids.
Right.
We also give them to poor kids. Well, no. Poor, but I mean, who have financial need, who can't afford to go. We give away tuition for international students to get some international students here. We do that with a wide variety of people for recruiting purposes. At the end of the day, we still got to meet a budget. So we've got to be, we're operating on a pretty lean course here because we're going to give some to athletes, we're going to give some to smart kids, some to kids that are needy. We do a wide variety of those things, and we do give away tuition, and we give away millions of dollars to do that, but you don't have free seats. Everybody costs us money because I've got to pay for the faculty members, and we spread that over a period. We don't adjust our price. For example, tuition set by the Board of Regents. This is our second year of no tuition increase. So if the tuition money isn't going to go up, and the state dollars didn't go up. I've got a budget cut this year. I've got to cut some money from the budget. When a student comes in, the Board of Regents has a tuition policy, and that is $172 a credit hour. Okay, I can say, well, we're not going to charge them for that. You can just go sit in the class for free. But there's an associated cost to that, and it's spread over everybody. And so it isn't a loss leader. It isn't a marginal cost. It's an actual cost that we have. My budget is given to me by central administration. And they say, Doug, you get 7,000 students, and they take this many credit hours, 30,000 credit hours. You take that times the tuition, that's your budget. You choose whatever you want to do with that. So that's all the money I get. If I give it all away and I don't have any money to pay anybody, I can't keep the doors open. And so, yeah, we do give some away, and athletics gets more. The question always is, well, how about giving us more? And then the honors program comes in and says, well,
How about us?
We're bringing in students that have 29 ACT students that are going to be honor students that are going to do real well. How come we don't get more? Or,
Well, the music department and fine arts,
there's a wide variety of those. By far, athletics gets the lion's share of what we would call remissions. They get more than everybody else does. And but we got to be careful not to over-remit, because we don't know how many people are going to show up either. You know, I've already got next year's budget planned. I know how many faculty members I have. I know how many staff people. I know my utility cost and my insurance cost. And so I've got $63 million I'm spending starting July 1st. What's the only factor I don't know? How many kids are going to show up in the fall? And for every kid that doesn't show up in the fall, that didn't show up last year, that's about $15,000 a student. So that means I have to reduce my expenditures if they don't show up. So there's an unknown factor in financing the university as well. Now, if we have more students show up than we predict, we've got a little extra cash. It's one-time monies. It's not enough that you would hire a faculty member every year, but that's the reason you have a reserve and sort of a buffer, and we give and take. We'll have a budget cut. The Regents meeting last week, we'll have about $120,000 budget cut. And the issue is, how do you share that? Do you give athletics their, they're about 3% of our budget. Do you make them share in the cut? They're already down. But if they don't take their share, that means somebody else picks it up, and they pay more. And so you have to balance all the interests of the university when you do that.
Just another minute here with Doug Christensen, Chancellor at UNK. We did mention Blue Gold fundraiser was Monday. That's always one of the largest fundraisers of the year. Once again, well attended. Maybe just a report on what you know.
Well, that's really scary. I was having my picture taken. It's really hard to be on the golf course and not have a club that you're using and playing. But tremendous. Tremendous support by the community to go out and do this. Yeah, they had some fun, but that's not a small commitment by the golfers to go play. They're paying a pretty good fee to go play, and it supports student athletes. So it's good to have the Mike Colgates and some of the other players we have out there, so people get to meet them. But I think very successful. This is 25 years we've been doing this. They started off by having Barry Switzer and. You put a few beers in Barry and turn the switch on.
Now you got a show.
Yeah, and it's kind of matured since then. But the same is true with many of the fundraisers that we have. Daryl had a tremendously successful one. I know that our other sports have fundraisers and do well, and some it's really hard. It's hard to, for example, track and field. You don't see too many people flocking to pay for scholarships for track and field, but go look at the success they've had. Brady is kind of a Pied Piper, and those kids literally would run through the wall for Brady Bonzel. I'm really pleased with Blue Gold. I think Paul's taken the athletic department in a great direction. We're trying to help him as much as we can. It's been a good year. A year ago today, when we were sitting here and we talked about endowed scholarships and we had zero, we're probably at 3 million today. That's a huge jump. That's 4.5% of $3 million now that's available for scholarships every year into the future. So if we could triple that and get close to $10 million, mm-hmm. now we're starting to cook a little with gas and we can do that. But I think great progress and very, very supportive of what they're doing and how they're doing it.
We every year we kind of bring you in for kind of the state of the university kind of report in terms of how it kind of associates
with. Still employed,
with,
I think yeah. that's the news
story. kind of where are we? What is the greatest area of success that you kind of look at, and the greatest area in the next year that really does need to be addressed by the university? And
as
again,
a whole,
looking
at athletics.
Well, go ahead and do both because I mean they're going to be similar. They're also going to be a little different.
Right, they're all tied together.
It all comes in green.
It does. It's all money, but it's also, I think there's some real definite things that we're looking at. Great momentum on campus right now. So the challenge is to continue that momentum. Wellness center will have a big impact on a lot of people here in this community. The health science education complex is going to bring us a different type of student. And, you know, you see that being built right now. And our progress on University Village as we begin to plan, that's where I was this morning. We're working on plans for our anchor housing operations there. That's going to have an impact on athletics as well because that's going to provide them some other opportunities. You know, what do we do with the community? How do we work with Kearney High School? What do we share for facilities? All those things are going to happen this year and are going to get ironed out. And that's what's, to me, very encouraging. I think those are high points, that there's great cooperation with the high school and the community about recreational athletic opportunities here in the community. Things that make me nervous. Change. I mean, we're going to get a new president, hopefully, of the university. What happens if her or his views of athletics change? You know, or commitments, that'll have a big change on all of us. We don't know what that is. We're just going to have to adapt to it and find out. The MIAA makes me nervous always. You know, what happens if in August when the Big Five conferences become the czars of the world, and they will, they're going to get tremendous amounts of money. They're going to have to give some of that money to the mid-majors to keep them happy. The mid-majors, there's not enough of them to participate in a level, so they're going to be looking at particularly football schools in Division II and want to bring them up. So they're going to dangle some money in front of the Pittsburghs and the Northwest Missouris. Well, if that happens, what happens to the MIAA? You know, all of a sudden, we've got a conference that changes. We've already seen those changes.
Yeah.
We've seen schools leave that were on the lower end of competitive. So what happens if every school says, well, I'm not competitive in this sport, I'm not going to be part of the conference? Pretty soon, there isn't a school left in the conference that has every sport in the conference. And do you really have a conference when you're doing that? That makes me nervous because we signed on to see Truman, UNO, Hayes, and now the only one we got is Hayes there. There are changes, and that makes me nervous. In general, I think enrollment's stable. I think we've got strong support. We're working well. The medical center and Kearney are the models of working together. That's going to help us. So I'm kind of the point now where I haven't eaten a Runza or a hot dog for a while, and it's starting to sound good. That must mean fall's coming.
No, don't quit it. Quit it.
God.
Quit it. Quit it. Quit it. Summer hasn't even started. Quit it. Quit
I get to November. I can't look at a hot dog or a runs. I just can't do it.
Quit it. Quit. I'll buy you lunch today, and we'll take care. We'll take care of your craving.
Man.
How about that?
There's always ways.
The storms happened yesterday.
Well, Doug, we'll let you get on to your next stop. Always appreciate you giving us some time on the Doug and Daddy Show and updating us on the big picture up at UNK. Have a great summer, my friend.
I will. Thank you so much, and we do appreciate the support you give. You know, our student athletes do labor without a whole lot of attention, and you all bring very accurate, good attention to those student athletes And they may not get a chance to tell you, but we really do appreciate that. And I think people who don't come out and watch Division II are really missing the boat, because you get to know the student athletes, you get to know their mom and dad, and there's a lot to be very proud of. So thanks for helping people do that.
It won't be long until we're jumping up and down with blue and gold again as part of our Loper Link.
Go Lopers.
Brought to you by Russ Smith, Charterwest National Bank, Kearney, offering all types of loans from FHA, VA, RD, and conventional home loans. And for seniors, the reverse mortgage loan. You have the reasons, they have the loans at Charterwest National Bank. We'll talk Belmont Stakes. We'll talk Tri-City Storm Hockey, the USHL, the NHL playoffs, and more. Keep it here.
Honestly, the first thing I thought was I might be out for a long time if I don't get this checked out, because I heard a pop in my ankle, and so I came here. It's like having a second set of coaches. They want you to get better, just like your coaches want you. They push you. It feels really, really good to get over something. It's kind of like winning a football game. It's something that you love the feeling of it, because you're back to 100%, and then you're back to playing again.
Family Physical Therapy and Sports Center, with locations to serve you across central Nebraska.
It's been 36 years since racing's last Triple Crown winner.
But California Chrome shines bright in the Kentucky Derby!
Now, California Chrome makes his run at history.
Under Victor Espinosa, California Chrome has won the Preakness by two!
The final jewel in racing's Triple Crown, the Belmont Stakes, this Saturday.
Coverage begins at 4 Saturday on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
ESPN Radio Superstation 1460 and 1550 Weather Eye Weather is brought to you by Farm Bureau Insurance agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers on North 2nd Avenue in Kearney.
Health insurance is changing. You have new options, but which one is right for you? As authorized independent agents for Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska, Farm Bureau Financial Service agents Rich Peters and Matt Myers know health insurance and can help you understand your options and the differences between them. Contact Rich Peters and Matt Myers and see how they can simplify the process and help you select the right health insurance policy for you and your family. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Nebraska is an independent licensee of the Blue Cross and Blue Shield Association. Securities and services offered through FBL Marketing Services, LLC, affiliate Farm Bureau Financial Services.
We'll see some lingering clouds early on, followed by some clearing developing later today as we top off at about 79 for a high. North winds will meanwhile stay at about 10 to 15. Tonight, there's a chance for isolated storms with a low at 58. I'm Paul Frombly. Right now, it's 63.
Show rolling on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation as the post position draw, which helps out the Doug and Daddy Show, came out this morning. They do that in the afternoon for the Preakness and for the Kentucky Derby. But Michelle Yu joins me, Doug Duda, and Randy Bushcutter here on the Doug and Daddy Show on ESPN Radio. And Michelle, we got what we wanted, a chance at a Triple Crown. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning. Doing great over here.
Great to have you on. The post-position draw this morning, California Chrome gets the two. Everybody's saying that's what Secretariat had in 1973 when it won the Triple Crown. Was there anything out of the draw this morning that was real newsworthy or noteworthy for you?
You know, I don't know if that's necessarily the spot that they wanted. I think he's probably at a disadvantage having a break from the two. just because he has had gate issues in the past. You know, we didn't see him have any in the Kentucky Derby or the Preakness. I personally wish he had been a little bit more outsidely drawn, because then everyone can kind of bring, hopefully, some slow breakers to his outside. And if he should miss a step, he could get himself gathered up and get a good stalking position, not trapped in. Being down in the two hole, he's going to have to use a little bit of gas to get out and get out there where he's not going to wind up, you know, stuck behind someone who's just targeting to basically make him have a bad trip. So I know everyone's kind of jazzing along and saying, oh, that's the Secretariat one. I think someone even said that he's had the same post positions in every race Secretariat, but that's not true. I'm a little bit more concerned than they're making it out to be. That being said, it is a mile and a half. He's got plenty of time to get out.
Michelle, how important is a Triple Crown to the popularity of the sport? I mean, we haven't had it in 36 years. It does seem to be still the sport of kings. But is it important, or over the last 36 years, it's kind of developed that it really doesn't matter that much?
Not necessarily the fact that winning it is what's important. I think it's the pursuit of it that really makes it important to the sport. And I think that this year, they're proving you wrong. It's no longer the sport of kings. We're talking about a horse that was bred to guys that call themselves dumbasses. They bought a cheap cleaning mare who couldn't run, bred her to a stallion who couldn't win, who's had no other grade one winners, and you end up with this freak. So I think that this is the quintessential non-sport of kings of this year, at least. But really, it's the hunt of the Triple Crown that makes everyone get excited, that draws people to come to watch, that makes you want to root him home, you know. And if he wins, great, he'll go down in the history books, but what everyone will remember is, gosh, I got to watch him through all three. So I don't know if it's as important just as the pursuit and the opportunity of it in the long run.
We're talking with Michelle Yu, Horse Racing Television, on the Doug and Daddy Show here on ESPN Radio. Michelle, I've had a lot of people, and we've got a lot of folks that have tweeted us throughout the week and the last couple of weeks, and the question is out there that horses get tired. It's tough to run the three races in this short amount of time, but horses have done it. Are they just not bred the same? Is there a overall reason why we haven't had a Triple Crown winner in so long?
Yes, there is obviously a change in breeding. Americans tend to breed a lot more towards speed rather than stamina now. But I think the real reason might possibly be because the lack of racing our horses get now. They're worth so much money. I mean, they're really a commodity rather than just an athlete. And you have to, you know, be careful with them. So previously, when you watched, you know, a horse like Citation go into the Derby with 13 starts under his belt, these three races weren't a big deal. You know, I mean, horses like Damascus were working a mile, getting on a train, driving to the races, racing, and getting on a train and racing 3 days later. And horses just don't do that nowadays. We space out our more expensive horses' races so far. I mean, we're going, you know, a month, 6 weeks in between races sometimes. And what you get with California Chrome is a real throwback, we like to call him. You know, he's a horse that going into the Derby had 10 starts under his belt. They never thought he was going to be this horse, and Art Sherman just kind of treated him like a real racehorse, like a blue-collar horse. So because of that, he has so much seasoning and so much foundation that even though he's never had to come back in 2 weeks and then 3 weeks, he's just had a lot of racing under his belt that's going to help him in that regard bounce back from these races. And he's really thriving when you look at him. He doesn't have a pimple on him. Most of these horses, when they go through the series, lose weight. You know, it's just a hard, it's a lot of shipping, it's a new environment. And he's bigger than he was when he went into the Derby.
Michelle, as I watch the race, is there something I can kind of look for to say, all right, California Chrome's in pretty good shape here? Is it simply that California Chrome has the opportunity to kind of come back? Is there a time pace? Is there a pace behind the horses we're kind of looking for? What kind of, just as a casual fan, what kind of landmarks can I be looking for to say, all right, California Chrome's in good shape or not in good shape?
I definitely think that you want to make sure California Chrome is in the front tiers of the horses that are running. I want them to be, you know, first three horses. You definitely don't want to see him stuck down along the rails. I've never seen him run a good race stuck down along the rail. You know, Victor's done a great job keeping him outside of horses. And, of course, you definitely want to look for that move at the top of the stretch. I think that he's going to have to be in front by then, and that's kind of what Victor's done with him. He snuck away in the middle of the turn where everyone goes, oh, no, he's he's moving too early, but he gets such an advantage that no one can catch him. And Belmont's tricky because a lot of out-of-town riders move much, much too early, and then you've got nothing left in the stretch. But I think with him, it's imperative to be pretty much near the lead when they turn for home. Just maybe wait to ask him, but I don't want to see him have to be picking off horses as they come down the stretch.
We're talking with Michelle Yu of HRTV, Horse Racing Television, here on the Doug and Daddy Show on ESPN Radio. Doug Duda, Randy Bushcutter with you on this Wednesday. Michelle, give us an early handicap of the field. You've got Commanding Curve that was closing strong in the Kentucky Derby, the long shot that helped pay off some pretty good Exacta and Tri tickets, even though the favorite won. You've only got a couple of other horses, Right On Curlin and General A-Rod, that have or are going to run in all three. Then you've always got the new horses that haven't run in either of the first two races, and it looks like they've kind of handicapped them accordingly. What about Michelle's handicap early on here this week?
You know, I feel like this is so tough because in your heart of hearts, you really want him to win. It's such good connections. He's such a nice horse. You really just want him to win. You don't want to make excuses for why another horse can beat him. Personally, I know a lot of people are putting a lot of stock in Commanding Curve, because they waited and they came to this race, and obviously, like you said, he was closing fast in the Derby. But you have to remember, it's very misleading unless you go back and watch. He was being asked in an all-out drive. California Chrome was pulling up. The margin of victory is very deceiving when you take a look at that. California Chrome could have, I think, just kept five or six in front, but Victor was saving him knowing the rigors of the next three races or the next two races that he was going to have to undertake. So I don't know if Commanding Curve is really as good a horse as it made him seem with California Chrome pulling up in the Derby. I think a lot of people are looking at Tonalist from the Christophe Clement barn. He was an impressive winner in the Peter Pan. That being said, the Peter Pan has not produced a Belmont winner in a very long time. And remember, it was on an off track, so that obviously might have moved him up. And then we get again to the racing factor where, you know, a horse like Tonalist has four starts under his belt, and California Chrome has 12 now. If there's any horse that's going to be able to have the foundation to push through that mile and a half, it should be a horse with a lot of racing experience. I think of all the horses that worked at Belmont this week, actually Right On Curlin got some of the least favorable reviews. Huh. And I don't know if that's just, you know, kind of him, or if that's something that's, you know, the Triple Crown taking its toll on a horse that's run guts out every time.
Michelle, if Commanding Curve can't hang in there, and it seems like everything I'm listening to and reading and watching this week saying he's just trying to be a superstar, he's handling everything so well, but if he runs out of gas, which of these horses is the best closer in the field?
That's the big question, right? Which one? Because we have no experience with them going a mile and a half. You want to take a look at a horse like Wicked Strong, who's gotten the most miserable post and a terrible trip in the Kentucky Derby and still closed well. You know, this is his home track. I think a lot of people are going to look to him. But there's no way, usually, I would say, to handicap a race like the Belmont on who's going to close. Because if there's a big difference between a mile and a quarter and a mile and a half, and we've only seen them go as far as a mile and a quarter. That being said, the majority of these have gone just a mile and an eighth or a mile and 3/16. That's a really long distance between the end of that and the end of the Belmont. That's why we get such big upsets in the Belmont. Horses like Guitara that never won again. Horses like Victory Gallop that outnoses, you know, a possible Triple Crown contender in Roquaya, because it's just unproven ground. You just don't know who's going to be able to thrive off that. It's a situation where you could almost throw pedigrees and everything else right out the window, because you just don't know how these horses are going to handle this unbelievably long, unbelievably deep, sandy stretch at Belmont. And then if it rains, oh my gosh, it's going to be crazy if it rains.
Well, with all those New Yorkers trying to get out to the track, it'll be outstanding. That's the best part of having somebody going for the Triple Crown, is all the attention it brings to the sport. Last minute with Michelle Yu here on the Doug and Daddy Show. Michelle, James, and all the gang that are listening over in Grand Island today, think that this whole undercard is like a Breeders' Cup race card.
Yeah.
You got any?
Oh yeah.
You got anything? They've thrown out. Can anybody beat Beholder on the undercard?
That's, you know what? I was going to tell you. I was going to hope you made sure to mention the undercard. There are going to be three other Grade Ones and two Grade Twos on the Belmont undercard. It's going to be a sensational day of racing, the second richest day in North American racing. Can someone be Beholder? Maybe. It's her own fault if it is, because Beholder is very, very quirky. She schools all the time. She's been known to get rambunctious. I mean, Richard Mandela has done an absolutely sensational job with her. But, like, the day or 2 days before she shipped, she had been schooling consistently well at Santa Anita. In fact, her last race was probably the best behaved I've seen her. And then a couple days before she shipped, she was out schooling in the paddock, and she reared up and almost flipped over an unseated Davy. And then he gets back on her, and she tries to flip him off again. And that's how she's going to leave to Belmont. And I haven't seen her school at all at Belmont. I did see her work, and she looked great. But there's going to be a massive crowd there. And if anything does in Beholder, that's what it's going to be, is herself, just because she is so quirky. You know, we saw a similar situation when she ran in the Kentucky Oaks, and she couldn't beat Princess of Stillmar. And I think some of it might have had to do with pre-race situations going on with her. But, you know, Princess of Stillmar is so nice, and you have to say Close Hatches always looks like a machine. This is going to be a fantastic, fantastic race. I can't even believe I can't be there for it. Can someone be Beholder? Sure, but it's going to be because of something she does, I think, not because she can't beat the class of fillies lining up against.
Michelle, in the big race, Triple Crown, California Chrome, yes or no?
I have to say yes, just because you want it so bad. I'm not a favorite there, and I like to do the devil's advocate, and I like to try and find someone sneaky, but my heart wants to say yes, because you want it so bad for these people.
Does your head follow suit as well?
Yeah, that's a situation where I don't even want to get into what my head says, because no, let's try and get him beat.
Let's go get the money. Let's go get the money.
Exactly.
Well, Michelle, one way or the other, it'll be exciting on Saturday afternoon, and we'll have it right here on ESPN Radio, and we sure appreciate you joining us, and we can't wait to talk horses with you again down the road.
Great. Thank you guys so much. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thanks, Michelle.
You joining us here on the Doug and Daddy Show on ESPN Radio. So there you have it. 3-5 California Chrome, 6-1 Wicked Strong with the Boston connection, and go back to the Kentucky Derby. Tonalist New is at 8-1, and then Commanding Curve is 15-1, right on Curlin 12-1. Everybody else 20 or 30-1.
And you know, there is a little bit of luck that's involved in that as well. You kind of mentioned the bad run that Wicked Strong had. Got basically pinned in and just never really had an opportunity to run the race they wanted to run. Who's to say that isn't going to happen to California Chrome? Because it's very possible, coming out of the two gate, to get pinned in on the inside pretty effectively. So you do need to have a little bit of good fortune, in even if you are a good horse, like California Chrome certainly has proven to be.
Joe Drape of the New York Times will join us tomorrow. Gino Bucola, TVG Network, will join us Friday for more on the Belmont Stakes. When we come back, we bring in our own jockey, Greg Shea. He's going to talk some hockey.
Hockey jockey. He's a hockey jockey.
There you go. I love it. Back after this.
Come on in. Let the games begin.
Hi, this is Jeremy from HK Sports Bar and Grill. Or you can call it Hastings Kino. You can call it plain Kino. My point is this. We aren't just your daddy's Kino parlor anymore. We're a new restaurant. I mean, the building's in the same place, but it's a new restaurant. The faces are different. The menu is different. Atmosphere is different. Everything's different. It is a new restaurant. If you haven't been here lately, you haven't been here.
Come on in. Let the games begin.
California Chrome flashed breathtaking closing speed to win the Kentucky Derby and the Preakness. Now he takes on the $1.5 million Belmont Stakes, the longest, most exhausting final leg of the Triple Crown. Simulcast for wagering Saturday at Bonner Park. Be there for the Belmont, plus world-class racing from 23 tracks. First race, 10:25, clubhouse open, 1 p.m. California Chrome runs for the Triple Crown. Watch and wager Saturday, Bonner Park, Grand Island.
A better place to live doesn't have to be a dream. Not when there's somewhere where you can make new friends, have new things to see and do, and become a part of a caring community, all on the most affordable of terms. Affordable senior housing at Good Samaritan Society Goldbeck Towers makes this a reality to seniors 62 and older who meet HUD guidelines. Contact a housing professional at Goldbeck Towers for more information on affordable housing, or find us on the web at good-sam.com.
Play ball!
Great fielding and solid hitting start with the right stuff from TM Sporting Goods. Choose from brands like Louisville Slugger, Rip It, Mizuno, and Wilson. All the summer sports are made better with the right apparel and equipment from TM Sporting Goods.
Save!
Then roll in the expertise provided by Steve Varinall and Tino Martinez. TM Sporting Goods on the Bricks, downtown Kearney, a division of Protein Design. Every sport done right.
Who likes contracts? Whether it's your gym membership or cell phone service, nobody likes contracts, right? That's why you should choose Prairie iNet. They offer amazing internet service and you never, never have to sign a contract. You'll get fast, reliable service for streaming video, playing online games, and social media. They're locally based with local people, local support, and local pricing. And there is no risk with their 30-day money-back guarantee. Remember, no gimmicks, no contracts with Prairie iNet.
To sign up for Prairie iNet, call 308-224-2309. 224-2309.
Hello out there, we're on the air, it's hockey night tonight. Tension grows, the whistle blows, and the puck goes down the ice. The goalie jumps and the players bump and the fans all go insane.
Doug and Daddy Show, someone Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
Hockey night.
My head is swimming today, and I know, make fun, say your jokes, whatever, but I don't know why. It's just talking to Doug Christensen, talking to Michelle Yu, that has nothing to do with it, but something. Maybe it's just all the rain we got. Maybe it's all the storms we got.
Sounds like everybody's okay.
Yeah, let's go with that. I don't even know why I bring that up. You don't care.
I'm concerned about you and your mental stability.
Let's take
it. I've often questioned it, so I am concerned.
I've medicated myself. Midtown Mart of Hastings, home of the coldest beer and coolest topics. We asked you yesterday, who do you think will win the Stanley Cup? Kings or Rangers? And, of course, four or five games, six or seven. I said I would wait to make my pick until today. Randall, that was for your benefit. Who you got? Kings, Rangers. Who did I have? I didn't have either one of these in the finals, did I? Colorado over, who did I have? Somebody off the bottom. Oh, no, I didn't have Pittsburgh.
Did I have the Rangers? I think I did have the Rangers, didn't I? In the East? I mean, I had Colorado in the West. I think I had the Rangers. I'm going to stick with the Rangers. I'm going to go Rangers, and I just think it's going to fall to seven. Or did I have the Habs?
My apologies. Why the heck?
I had the Habs.
Why
okay.
The hell did I pick Pittsburgh?
Because that was a coin flip in my mind. I remember that.
Okay.
And it ended up being kind of a coin flip in the, on the ice as well.
So you're taking the Rangers.
I'll take the Rangers. I'll take one of the original six versus, like, the second six.
Everybody says the Kings are the better team. Now, let's see. The Kings and the Kings were down 3-0 in the opening series, right, to San Jose?
Yeah.
And they came back.
And then they got hot. Well, they keep finding a way to win that seventh game. They're Freddy Krueger. You can't kill them. Or is that Jason? I can't remember. But anyway, they just keep coming back.
We're playing in L.A. tonight.
Right. So the L.A. will have the home ice advantage if it goes seven.
I am very tempted. Oh, this would be great on the money line. I'm going to take the New York Rangers in five.
Wow.
I would have taken them in a sweep, but I think the Kings win game two. So I am taking the Rangers in five. Is this a 2-3-2 or is this a 2-2-1-1-1 deal? It's a 2-3-2. Okay, so that makes me feel even better. You get one in L.A., and you win them all at Madison Square Garden, and the Rangers in five today. Who will win the NBA Finals? Ding, Miami Heat. And that's a 2-2-1-1-1, or are we back to 2-3-2 there? They've decided to do the right thing and go 1-1-1.
Yeah.
So that means San Antonio is home first, so they would have game seven, so I'll take Miami in six.
That sounds about right to
Miami
me.
Miami in six.
That sounds about right to me, although I'll be rooting for the Spurs.
Greg Shea, Tri-City Storm, who you got in this hockey deal?
I don't know. I was actually watching the monitor above you and seeing the U.S. Open preview for next week and thought, my mind was drifting. I love you know, you think of events you love to watch and you know you'll make time to watch them. The U.S. Open for me is one of those events. I mean, I'll make time to watch that race on Saturday. I'll make time to watch, you know, a lot of sporting events. But I said before when we were at the commercial break that for hockey, the sport of hockey, which, you know, we know it, we live it, we breathe it. It's not, you know, we like to think it's considered one of the big three, but we also know its place. Having said that, it you couldn't ask for in the media side of it to be any bigger than to have L.A. and New York. So I said the other day, selfishly, whether I was rooting for either one of those, and I was not, that it make, you know, for our business to grow our business for the sport of hockey, you got what you want. And now I could only hope for seven games. If I had to pick a team, boy, at this point, it's hard to cheer against L.A. Or it's hard to pick against L.A. Cheer against, I guess you can cheer against them. It's hard to pick against L.A. in the fact, I don't care if you're a hockey fan or not. If you're a sports fan and you've grinded out seven-game series and have to win the seventh game, they just did it again the other night. And they were down 2-0 before they even laced up their skates in Chicago. So that's pretty impressive. It's hard. I mean, it, just as a sports fan, you have to appreciate that type of achievement. So I guess I'll take L.A., and it's good for the game.
Well, 44% took the Kings in 6 or 7. 33% took the Rangers in 6 or 7 as our Midtown Mark Cooler question. Vote now at ESPNSuperstation.com on the NBA Finals.
Well, I don't think Chicago would have been a bad selection there because, I mean, to have a matchup in the Stanley Cup Finals of two of the original six, and, you know, hockey's a bigger deal in Chicago than it is in L.A. I understand you want to kind of grow it, but I think you see more Blackhawk jerseys around than you certainly do.
Yeah. Wayne Gretzky.
Chicago, yeah, you just look at Chicago's a Chicago had been a fine matchup.
Yeah.
Don't get me wrong. I've had Chicago friends that have said, are you kidding me? Chicago, you know. Well, you're talking about the coast. It just encompasses even more. You have to think about TV and how that impact all those. I mean, I guess I think about all of that and how it can. I don't think it's as great. If it ends in five, like Doug said, I think it's got to go the distance to get the maximum out of that matchup. It'll go the distance.
And the Rangers are about the one New York team that I can root for. I'll be honest with you.
That's
the one New York team.
Let's talk USHL with Greg Shea, the president, owner, czar of the Tri-City Storm.
Not a lot of things you just said, but
this week, a new commissioner and president of the USHL was introduced. Skip Pence had been there for 6 years. This is just the third commissioner in 20 years. And I don't know why. Skip just, it was his time. He wanted to step aside. I listened to the press conference from Bob Fallon, and it seemed like there were, well, I've got questions, so let's just start with the change, your thoughts, what it means for the league, what it means for the Storm.
Well, I've been around this league a long time. Even took a couple of years away from this league, and this will be my fourth commissioner in two different tours of duty in this league. The first was Dave Tyler. Dave Tyler was it was kind of a hometown feel to the league, and it wasn't the business that is today. I think he's retired now. He's a practicing attorney in Waterloo, Iowa, and he's now kind of an emeritus member of the USA Hockey, you know, board. He's earned that right. But he was the right commissioner at the right time, and the business model wasn't the same, certainly as it is today. The game's not even the same. Then you went to Gino Gasparini, and Gino was a former highly decorated coach at the University of North Dakota, multiple championships, and they wanted a hockey guy. They no longer wanted a business guy. They wanted a hockey guy, and they wanted him to learn the business side. And so Gino led him kind of into the next tier, which was the Tier 1 level. The United States Hockey League, as sanctioned by USA Hockey, is the only Tier 1 hockey in the United States. There are other leagues that are other tiers, but we're the only one. And that was a big move. It took a lot of politics because you have to petition USA Hockey to do that, and then you have to bring your standards of operations all the way up to meet it. And during that, it then led to our leagues growing. I don't think we can no longer, and I'm talking in generalities of people around the table, I don't think we can no longer just be about development of hockey. We have to be about development of business. We have to figure out, even at a top amateur league, how we can drive revenue sharing, how we can, you know, all these other business components that come into play. And so the search was on to find that person, and that was Skip Prince. He was a guy that worked in business development at the National Hockey League, CFL football league, college foot. I mean, you know, and you met him. Very impressive. I have a lot of respect for Skip Prince. Skip, it really helped grow this league. He's done amazing things with expansion. We were very close to, even as an amateur league, of having a small regional television package. I mean, there's things that he, you know, the things that I could go on of that he didn't get accomplished, but he had us on the cusp. And it's a tiring job. You know, if you're a commissioner of a sports league at any level, you answer to the owners. The owners own the league, and you that's your job. And so it's a delicate, tiresome job, and hard for anybody to take on. I mean, I don't care what league, that's what the commissioner, and then, oh, by the way, they're the figurehead, and they've got to do all this other stuff. But ultimately, when they get into the boardroom, they're answering to whatever number of owners are around that table. This league is growing to a point where both on the ice and off the ice, along with, you know, just are we going to take that next step? And I'll give Skip a lot of Prince, Skip a lot of Prince, Skip Prince a lot of respect in the fact that he identified a couple of years ago that and Skip all along had a really nice deal. He could still hold his consulting business, so he's been consulting for the University of Texas, and which I think is where he's actually headed. He had some other things going on. He didn't just step away knowing that there wasn't a way to you know take care of his necessities in life and his. In the end, he basically started, and you respect a guy who says, I'm going to give you another year that I've got in the contract, but I will also let you know that I'm not going to continue after that, and I want it to be a smooth transition. And so I'll get my first introduction to Bob Fallon in Colorado Springs on Monday, and I have not met him. I'm familiar with him, but this is the next step in our league of growth. We're going to a guy who's been living the marketing side, living the business side, but from on the other side of the street. The guy that we try to convince to be a partner is now going to lead our league from a business standpoint and a development standpoint.
You kind of led me where I kind of wanted to go. You kind of mentioned some guys were business guys. Gino was a hockey guy. And it sounds like Bob Fallon is really kind of a marketing guy. He's dealt with trademarks, all sorts of things. How important is that marketing element to the growth of this league?
Well, at the end of the day, it's about whether or not you can make money and whether or not you can break even. I mean, I hate to be that. I mean, sports is a business, whether it be amateur or professional, and these just happen to be privately owned. You know, this isn't a league-owned situation. These are individual entrepreneurs that own these individual businesses that pay to be a part of the bigger body, which is the United States Hockey League. The United States Hockey League traditionally has never generated top-line revenue that's trickled down to the rest of the teams. It's always been, you know, you pay into the league, you pay in seat line. I mean, over the course of time, we got really, really educated and really smart on how we could pay up to the league, but we've never figured out how the league could pay down. Once the league starts paying down, wow, you've really got a commodity. You really got something that's exciting, and that's been a challenge for any of them. So Bob Fallon, with his resume, with his experiences, so we're going to stay with that, and I think it's clearly the right way to go. By the way, there's some amazing gifted owners in this league, and some of the owners now are people that have, you know, Brad Kwong is an example, played college hockey at Harvard University. His partners in the Dubuque ownership group include Peter Sorelli, who's the general manager of the Boston Bruins. Brad, they were college teammates at Harvard. Brad works on Wall Street. I mean, but his dream was to own a hockey team and work in the hockey bit. That's the ownership level that some of these guys are. They're very smart. They formed the search committee. They went out and found Bob, and what they're looking for is a guy that can take us to that level where the model now generates revenue that can trickle down and help these franchises, and because we all need it. You know, Kearney, Nebraska, the Tri-Cities, central Nebraska, is a wonderful market, but it's also, you know, and it's the Kansas City Royals market for, you know, I mean, if you want to say, you know, we're the little guys, and we knew it when we got in. But now, 15 years later, our travel gets every, the expenses keep going here. The revenues are only going to be, you know, at a certain level. So we need that top-down revenue. And I think that this is a guy with the connections that he's got, and he's been living it. You know, they're gonna count on those connections coming over, those relationships and partnerships to be able to, you know, to bring that to the table.
Greg Shea with us in studio with the Tri-City Storm. He's been with the Storm since day one. There has been, we were down to 10 teams at one point, right? And so now we've got all the expansion, and we've got teams coming in. But Commissioner Fallon couldn't answer it. Skip Prince danced around the question, I'll say. I just it boggles my mind, Greg, and I guess
it'll be good because I didn't listen to it. So
I have to. Well, you'll be able to give your opinion on this as well. I don't care if it's the USHL, if it's the MIAA, if it's the NBA, what level you're at. I cannot figure out how the USHL let Indiana fold their team. They won. I mean, you're looking for publicity. You're looking for positive publicity. And you're in, I don't care what level it is, your champion is disbanded because you can't find a barn to play in. I am stunned that they didn't move them to one of these expansions. Indiana's done. They have dispersed their team. They can say what they want in the USHL. Indiana is done. If they have another team, this will not be the Indiana Ice. It is boggling to me, and like I said, my mind's swimming all over the place today.
How much time do we have, by the way?
And I get what happened with them having a problem in Indianapolis. I get it. Yeah. This isn't, hey, this is Kearney, and we built an arena for you to play hockey in, kind of. Indiana was trying to find a place to play, but to let your champion go dark, I can't understand it.
Okay. Well,
you don't have to be politically correct here.
I have to be politically correct because you know, we tweeted this out. Matter of fact, I can guarantee in Chicago at the league office, with today's social media, you need to be politically correct. This isn't something that just happened overnight. Number one, this has been coming for a while. I will say this. First of all, Paul Scott, who owns that franchise, continues to own the rights. And now, you know, he's holding another cup. It's mind-boggling for me too, and I've been at the table. I've listened to all sides of it, and believe me, the rest of the owners, when they saw this coming, and this didn't just happen. This has been coming for a while. There was an announcement. I think this is all easy to say. There was an announcement a couple of years ago that the Fairgrounds Coliseum in Indianapolis was going to be renovated. There's relationships at every level, and I'm not sure what the relationship deep down was. And this is a guy, by the way. Paul's done a lot for the game. Paul's brother-in-law, by the way, is the president of the Indiana Pacers. The family that he is associated with own the Pacers as well. So it's not a capital situation. I don't think he wanted to run out and buy or build another building. He played some games at Bankers Life for the Pacers play.
Yeah.
But for USHL, it's just too big.
It's too big, yeah.
And oh, by the way, it's not a very good financial model. I mean, it's visually it's not very good. It's not a very good financial model. And you got to keep that relationship going. Well, I don't know that the relationship kept going. Cities and other entities, other buildings, they're all, you know, they look for tenants. And while they couldn't get a deal, while they're going to renovate, they started looking for another tenant. So this isn't something that happened overnight. It was unfortunate. All the while, he's a very competitive person. And I appreciate that in him. And he continued to build a team. Everybody, throughout the season, as all of us knew that this was going to come to an end, everybody said, he's got another great team. And you know, I think most people would say best we're going to get out of it is the dispersal draft because they're going to win this thing with another great team. It is tough. Bob and Skip, I don't think there's any clear answer. I think there's guys at the table that were partners that saw it. Everybody saw it coming. You learn from it. You know, they probably, I mean, in the end, Things happen in these leagues. They're individual businesses, and they're delicate businesses. And you try to protect against these things. But these guys are partners. You know, I mean, they'll argue in the boardroom, and I guarantee at all levels they'll argue in the boardroom. But they also understand that they're spending at whatever level crazy amounts of money to run these, even at the USHL level. You know, it's still big numbers, not as big, you know, higher up, bigger the numbers. But the issues are, you know, issues sometimes are the same. And this one just went too far before it was too late. You know, it probably should have been someone probably should have stopped it, I guess. You know, they played out of a smaller building for a couple of seasons that most teams would tell you was clearly not suitable. It was not up to Tier 1 standards. I mean, USA Hockey, everybody was looking at it saying, what are we going to do here? You know, in case Paul's listening or in case Paul hears, I got a lot of respect for the guy. At the end of the day, yeah, this is tough to overcome. It is tough to overcome, and in today, 2014, you can't hide from it. Everybody knows it. They're not coming back.
It was mentioned during the Stanley Cup playoffs. You know, in one of the broadcasts on NBC Sports.
Yeah. I mean, USHL has certainly gotten to a level that has been referenced Olympic wise, NHL. You'll hear some reference. There's players in this cup that have come out of this league. It's tough. I don't like it. You hope it never happens again. But I will tell you, franchises are going to come and go. Either markets don't support it, people don't run them. I mean, there's all kinds of things. You know, we have our own issues that we face day in and day out. And in their case, they ran out of options for a building. And then they couldn't get clearance to sell to another ownership group and another market. And that's the one thing he probably could have. But I think the rest of the board decided instead of just going into another market and a potential market that would not, or at least on paper, did not look like it could succeed. They basically took a timeout and said, in the end, we're gonna get a black eye regardless. And the black eye at this point is instead of going and compounding and going into allowing for a sale into a market that potentially is going to be one, two, three years and done, we'll take the black eye of letting him fold. And at this point, he still owns franchise rights. He still has the option to sell, but most likely Indianapolis, now with an ECHL team coming in, into the Pepsi or whatever that building is in the Fairgrounds, I think you're probably right. We probably have seen its last days, or at least for a good long time. So we've expanded carefully. Bob's got his hands full, but I do think that this league grows because the leadership level grows.
Well, I think when this happens, people kind of now naturally think if it can happen to your league champion, nobody is immune from having a situation kind of come up where a franchise can go away. So with that as kind of the concern, what is the status of the USHL, in your opinion, and individual teams?
I would say the majority of the teams are profitable, which, you know, from a business standpoint, that's a model that you want. You know, number one, the sophistication is getting greater. The buildings that we're going, I mean, Sioux Falls is going into this beautiful new building. The owners and operators, it just continues to grow. I mean, I go to the league meetings now, and I wasn't very smart to begin with. Now I really feel dumb. You know, I sit around the table, and I look at some of the guys that are in the same position that I'm in at the other teams, and I'm afraid to open my mouth because of the credentials that they come. I mean, Tom Garrity, who I think will be the executive of the year, who runs Sioux Falls, these guys have jumped from the big leagues now because they want a different challenge, and they also are seeing what the USHL can do both for executives and for the players. And so I think it's good.
There's not another situation like this on the horizon.
I don't see another one on the horizon. I would always say, you know, they're private businesses, so you can't always look behind the curtain of what might be going on and what can happen. You know, you can't as much as you think. That one was going to happen. It's how it got rolled out. And the fact, I mean, if they don't win the cup, it's probably not as big a story. The fact is they won the cup.
Yep.
The only good I can tell you, we got one of their better players. So, it's a dog-eat-dog deal at the end of the day.
Silver lining.
We saw it coming. You know, I remember going in and talking to our coaching staff, and I said, you know, I knew they were working on it was just a matter of there was going to be rules as to how quickly that dispersal draft was going to happen. And you move on. Tough one. Hey.
Well, Greg, we are way over time, so I did learn something today, though. He goes to the meetings, and he feels like the dumbest guy in the room. Then I see the social calendar that he keeps here, and he's the smartest guy in the room. So I see how he works that out with his circle of friends.
It's a good job there.
But anything on the news docket here for the Storm? Or this is kind of the quiet time of the season.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing is we're getting ready for our tryout camp, which will happen later this month in Las Vegas. And, you know, we're optimistic. I mean, to have Chris Wilkie, Poganski, Dello. I mean, we had some guys that were pretty good producers at the end. Hey, we haven't won. We need to win. We know it. Everybody in our organization, top down, knows it. Easier said than done. You know, we went out and got Jim Holton, and that was risk. The thing I know about Jim is he's here's the news, folks. Jim's here to win, and he may not be here very long, but he's here to win. At the same time. I've never run into a coach that is so, you know, it is a one track. I'm here to get it done. He wants to get back at the higher level. I mean, he's been there. Once you taste it, I'm sure, you want to get back there. That's where he wants to get back to. We all know that. But in order to get back there, it takes a step here and step there. We hope we're the very first step, and we hope it's a positive step. And this will be his first full season that he can do that.
Yeah, we definitely see the fire. So best of luck. Greg, we will let you get back to your day here. Thanks for coming in.
This was fun. Thank you.
Man. Good seeing you again, Greg.
He every once in a while, he moves into the big boy seat over here as the hoster/co-host of the show, and we will yank him in.
There's a big boy chair?
Well, I mean, there's...
Whoever sat in this chair obviously was tall. Well, that must have been the chancellor, because my feet don't touch the ground.
I'm afraid
to adjust it.
We'll take a break, wrap it up after this.
All sports, one source, two stations, KICS Hastings, KXPN Kearney, Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
This is the very last week to save 30% on all weight loss products at Complete Nutrition. Hurry in today and save 30% on Refirm, Mancor, CTS, Charger, and more. Complete Nutrition has helped thousands of people lose weight with clinically proven weight loss products that actually shrink fat cells. If you want to lose 15 to 20 pounds of fat, tone up, and be healthy, it's the perfect time to come into Complete Nutrition because all weight loss products are 30% off. Hurry in. This is the last week of the sale. Stop into a Complete Nutrition store today for a free consultation. A Complete Nutrition consultant will set you up for success by recommending which weight loss product is best for you. Achieve your ideal weight with the help from Complete Nutrition. Get 30% off all weight loss products this week only at Complete Nutrition.
Find Complete Nutrition in Grand Island just north of Gordman's off Highway 281 and in Kearney just north of Sun Mart on 2nd Avenue.
Complete Nutrition.
Today, buyers need the OneRocky.com edge. Finding out first is what gives you the best chance of finding the right home. Kearney's best real estate website just got better with customized listing notifications sent right to your email. As soon as a new listing meeting your criteria becomes available, you'll be notified. Log on to OneRocky.com and get signed up now.
Yo, this is Rocky. My customized listing service is not junk email. We don't even collect data. It's just my way of putting you first in the hunt for the right home.
Put Rocky Geyser in your corner because he cares. Rocky.com.
Attention technicians! Are you looking for a rewarding career where it's always summer? Buzz's Marine in Kearney is looking for marine service technicians to join their team. If you have agriculture, marine, or automotive experience and possess the skills to work in a clean, award-winning service department, apply today. Buzz's Marine offers great wages and benefits including profit sharing, 401k, health insurance, and vacation. Submit your confidential application at 507 Central Avenue, Kearney, or go to buzzesmarine.com.
Thursday, it's game one of the NBA Finals. The San Antonio Spurs and the Miami Heat, the rematch from last season.
Allen fighting a cutting Chalmers to a cutting James. Throws it up and in, and he's fouled.
Can the Heat win their third straight championship? Or will the Spurs capture their fifth title?
Tony Parker, what a move.
It all starts with game one.
The Heat and Spurs, Thursday night at 8 on Central Nebraska's ESPN Radio Superstation.
We'll see partly sunny skies developing this afternoon with a cooler high temperature in the upper 70s. And there is a slight chance for a few spotty showers or thunderstorms late tonight with a low of 57. I'm Weather Eye meteorologist Sam Donaisky. Right now it's 66.
Yeah, you can. And we've gotten there.
You can never have enough rainfall, it seems like. There's once in a while where you'll get a little flood going, and I know some folks had that yesterday. But when the rain and Mother Nature are not working, T&L Irrigation is proven technology that works. Only T&L Irrigation systems are hydrostatically powered, the same simple and reliable power design you know and work with every day. And there is smooth, continuous system movement at any speed, precise rotation times at any temperature, high-speed rotation for frost control, uniform chemical application, high-efficiency variable displacement hydraulic pump that uses only the needed power and can be used with single or three-phase electricity. It's all there for you at your local T&L dealer, taking care of the central part of the United States for over 60 years. Now they've been taking care of not only every state in the country, but over 65 countries worldwide. Why? Because it works. Proven technology that works, T&L Irrigation Company. I did not see the show going so long today. What happened?
That's exactly right, and it wasn't from me. I know that. Okay. But we brought in some smart folks today.
That's true.
Michelle has forgotten more about horse racing than 98% of people know, and you know the Chancellor and Greg obviously. So, yeah, we brought in some smart folks, and you know, good luck finding some more tomorrow.
Yeah, I'll do what I can.
Yeah,
there is some baseball tonight. Kearney did play last night. Post 52 beat North Platte. The Runza Seniors lost by a run. Everybody else was postponed because of the weather. Hastings is playing Norfolk tonight. Juniors on the road, seniors at home. Kearney and Grand Island getting together for their annual meeting tonight.
I don't know what time that senior game started in North Platte, but it had to be late because that late junior game, because it was, there was a lot of delays, lightning delays, and right on that borderline, you know, it's like some officials, and I sat next to one and said, I wouldn't have seen that if I was behind the plate. Just saying.
Well, maybe he'll be with us on the show Friday.
I'm not mentioning any names. I'm not throwing anybody under a bus here.
More back to the Shrine Bowl. They're out at the on their trip today, so we'll talk more Shrine Bowl as we'll air that Saturday on Classic Hits 98.9. Joe Drake from the New York Times with the Belmont Stakes tomorrow. Damon Day scheduled to roll in and talk a little bit with us as the co-host tomorrow. So we do want to thank Doug Christensen, Chancellor at the University of Nebraska, Kearney, Greg Shea, President Tri-City Storm, and of course Michelle Yu from HRTV with our first look at the Belmont Stakes this week after the post position draw this morning.
Be well, Douglas. Be well.
All right. We'll see you next time, folks, here on the Doug and Daddy Show. Have a good day.
You've been listening to a Doug and Daddy podcast brought to you by Cunningham's Journal. Cunningham's Journal, the only bar you need to know in Kearney.
Oh, darling, I feel like amazing.
Don't make me do that again.
Game on.